Okay, folks, we're ready to make a start. Could I just welcome everybody to our meeting this evening in Dungannon and on virtual to the March meeting of the Council. We'd like to specifically welcome the public watching through our live broadcast. The live broadcast will run for the period of our open business. Sorry, we've got a bit of feedback. Could we ask everybody to just hit your mics there, just make sure. Okay, thank you. Our open business, no, we've still got an echo.
No, on your iPad, JJ.
On your iPad, sorry.
Whatever you've opened.
Go on the mute on your iPad.
On
your iPad,
please
go on
the
mute.
Oh, your laptop, whatever you have.
Apologies for this, we're having a little bit of...
He's in mute now.
All right, okay, that's us now. Sorry about that. Okay, the live broadcast will run for the period of our open business, but we'll end just before we move into confidential business, and I'll let you know when that happens. Some housekeeping, if you can bear with me, please. If you've joined the meeting remotely, please keep your audio on mute unless invited to speak, and then turn it off when finished speaking. Keep your video on at all times unless you have a bandwidth or internet connection issue. Then you're advised to try turning your video off. If you wish to speak, please raise your hand in the meeting or on your screen and keep raised until observed by an officer or myself. Should we need to take a vote this evening, I will ask each member to confirm whether you are for or against or abstaining. When invited to speak, please introduce yourself by name to the meeting. For any member attending remotely, if you declare an interest in an item, please turn off your video and keep your audio on mute until the duration of the item is completed. If referring to a specific report, please reference the report, the page or the slide being referred to. And lastly, can I remind the public and press that taking photographs of proceedings or using any means to enable anyone not present to see or hear proceedings or make a simultaneous oral report of the proceedings are not permitted. Thank you, and now we'll move to the first item on the agenda. Maybe before we do, we'll just take a roll call first, just to check everybody in. So again, if you could let me know if you're in attendance. We have an apology for Councillor Ashton tonight. Councillor Bell. Councillor Black.
Present.
Councillor Brown.
Present.
Councillor Buchanan.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Burton.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Clark. Councillor Colvin.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Corey. Councillor Cuddy.
Present,
Chair. Councillor Culbertson.
Here.
Councillor Doris. Councillor Doris.
Apology,
Councillor Doris. Apology, okay. Councillor
Elater. And Shaw.
Councillor Ford.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Gildernew.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Glasgow.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Graham.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Kearney. Present,
Chair.
Councillor Kerr. Absent. Councillor Mulligan. Okay. Councillor Martin.
Here,
Chair. Councillor Niall McAleer.
Here.
Councillor Sharon McAleer.
Here, Chair.
Councillor McFlynn.
Here, Chair.
Councillor Brian McGuigan.
Here, Chair.
Councillor Sean McGuigan.
Here, Chair.
Councillor McKinney.
Here, Chair.
Myself. Councillor McNamee.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Donald McPeak.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Sean McPeak.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Millen. Councillor Malloy.
Here, Chair.
Councillor Monteith. Absent. Councillor Mullen.
Here, Chair.
Councillor O'Neill.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Quinn.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Robinson.
Present, Chair.
Councillor Totten.
Here, Chair.
Councillor Wilson.
Here.
So, Councillor Bale was absent, is that right? Okay, that's the only one. And Councillor Mullen might turn up later on. Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. Done the apologies. Declarations of interest. You can either make them now or just prior to the item that will be for. Okay. Chair's business. Okay, I have a few points I just want to raise under Chair's business. I know a couple of other people have indicated as well. So, again, I've used the Chair's business to just to make members aware of some of the things that the Council are progressing with. A launch of a new tourism campaign, promoting Mid-Ulster to potential visitors from Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, was launched this week. It showcases a unique offering of open spaces and outdoor recreation, positioning Mid-Ulster as an ideal choice as a short break destination this spring. The Unwinding Time campaign is aimed at supporting the recovery of the district's tourist industry in the wake of the pandemic, as well as reinforcing the wider message that the area's tourism and hospitality sector is good to go. And I think it would be incumbent on me if I didn't ask that in the circumstances like this, if you would actually post those campaigns on and circulate them as widely as possible. All of those things help to promote our district. Second thing is the completion of a £4.27 million public realm at Cull Island, and we are aware that the Communities Minister visited Cull Island yesterday to mark the completion, and while she was there she announced a further investment of £274,000 from her department for to deliver revitalisation schemes to the town and enhance that whole experience there. And I have to say that the whole townscape was looking extremely well. So congratulations to all involved there. And there was a lot of input from council on that process. The other issue was on Wednesday of this week, there was a small reception hosted in the Bernavon for to acknowledge the success and development of many of our staff and officer team across the district. And as you know, that as a council, we are not at liberty to stand still, and we have to move with the times, and we have to promote and enhance our service to our public. And therefore, to do that, we need to develop our staff. And it was a tremendous honour to be there and to award and acknowledge those that have put their effort into developing their talent and their ability to be able then to deliver a better service to our community. And I believe it was extremely important that we acknowledge that. And furthermore, I say again, and I reiterate this, that our staff and our people are our greatest asset. And it's important that we do that. So again, that was a great opportunity. Also, Council will know this week that I had the great privilege and honour of welcoming their Royal Highnesses, the Prince of Wales and the Duchess of Cornwall, to Cookstown. And we have known this for a period of time. However, because of the nature of the visit, it was only sort of announced earlier in the week. It was a great honour as the Chair of the Council to welcome the Royals to our Mid-Ulster area and especially to Cookstown. But it was especially a great honour that it happened during the Majesty Queen's Platinum Jubilee year. Congratulate to all the town people and also to the staff of council and to our chief executive and to his team who put so much effort in behind the scenes to make it all happen, and I believe it is a good feel-good factor for our district and also for Cookstown itself. So well done to everybody involved there. Also, we had the privilege of meeting with Minister Poots this week. Again, his department has contributed over £900,000 to the redevelopment and of the recycling centre in Macrofelt. But again, it was good to be on site there and to see the work going on, and well done to the contractors involved and to all the design team and to everything else. It's good to see these things progressing and coming to the fore. Councillor Culbertson, you had an issue in relation to refugees.
Yes, Chair, and I suppose sadly it's over 1 month now since the war started in Ukraine, and I suppose we're all touched in what we see on our television screens, and just again to commend the outstanding efforts done locally to send aid to assist the refugees. But just I was approached this week by a local church who told me that they understood that there was to be welcome centres set up throughout Northern Ireland. And initially I replied back to them saying that I would understand probably the council would be the first protocol, but perhaps maybe if there was an update on that, or if not, just this particular church in Dungannon has kindly offered their premises if that's needed going forward. So if the officers could keep that in mind, I can give them the details afterwards. But it'd be good to hear what the latest is in relation to the local authority's role.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I can send all members out. I'll get a synopsis done, hopefully some stage tomorrow, for all members on what is happening. Our team are meeting regularly, Chair, on a weekly basis with the Department for Communities in Belfast in relation to the NA-wide reception and management of the refugees in relation to the Ukraine response. There was initially an early desire that there would be welcome centres established across all council areas, but at the moment the focus is to get a substantive regional one established in Belfast, and that's the focus at the moment. Our team are engaging with the department as to what a welcome centre will look like, what it will do, what support services, advice services, etc. are required. So no decisions have been made locally at this point. But I'll get an update sent to members on this. They're also working with Extern, and Barnardo's are taking a key role and have been commissioned to take a key role regional ways to input and to coordinate the response so that local authorities and everybody else are responding in a coordinated manner. So that's working, and our team are working with them. They're also working extensively as part of that partnership with the Housing Executive, because obviously accommodation and housing is a critical part of it. So they're part of that team. So I'm very confident that we are where we need to be, Chair. And based on that, I will get a more succinct update sent to the members over the next day or two.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Councillor Buchanan.
Mr. Chairman, I wish to congratulate yourself and the Chief Executive and officers of this Council for the way you facilitated and organised the Royal visit. This visit was a great boost for Cookstown and the whole of Mid-Ulster, and the superstars put on a great show for their Royal Highnesses. So thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, that brings us then to item 5, which is a deputation from NI Water. And I believe we have tonight Dr. Stephen Blockwell, who's the Head of Investment Management, Graham Miller, Head of Living with Water Programme, Valerie Crozier, who's a Stakeholder Manager, and Marie McCartney, Senior Strategic Planner. Can I say you're all very welcome. Thank you for joining us tonight. And I believe it's yourself, Stephen, that's taking us through the presentation. So I'm over to yourself.
Thank
Yep, over.
Firstly, thank you very much, Chair and Councillors for inviting me. And I want to present to you this evening. As you think, yes, I'm Steve Blocker, I'm the investment manager at NIWater, and I'm joined by colleagues tonight.
Steve, just I'm going to stop you. Your volume's not very great. I don't know whether that's on your side or our side. Maybe you just need to put it up a wee bit. We have an IT expert here, and he's just right. Can you do it your side?
Can you hear me now? Is that clearer?
It's a little bit better. I don't know how you people at home hear. Are they all right?
I'll see if I can.
If you can give me a thumbs up, somebody, you're hearing them okay? Right, okay, Steve, we've got the thumbs up, so go ahead.
Okay. Right. You got the presentation on the screen there?
Yes, lovely. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, yeah. This evening, folks, I want to share with you the utility regulator's final determination on our PC21 or Price Control 21. Business plan and what it means in terms of wastewater and water investment, especially regarding the Middlesbrough District Council area. We'll also cover the approach that we're taking in relation to facilitating development for Northern Isle Water's planning teams and our statutory planning responses, just to show that we have a fair and consistent approach across Northern Ireland. This page here really is NI Water on a page, and on the left-hand side of the figure is really the water part of our business, and on the right is more the wastewater. I just want to highlight the size of the business and the scale of our operations. You know, on a daily basis, we provide an average of 596 million litres of treated drinking water, and this is pumped to over 893,000 households and businesses through 27,000 kilometres of water mains. On the wastewater side, we collect about 368 million litres per day and convey that through a 16,000 kilometre network of sewers, which is conveyed through gravity or using our 1,300 wastewater pumping stations. And that takes the wastewater to over 1,000. It's a huge, huge system. And just as a way of comparison, we have 26,000 kilometres in roads throughout the whole of Northern Ireland. Every part of our infrastructure network, whether it's a treatment works, a pump or a pipe, has a finite capacity. And most of our business assets are legacy from decades ago, and so much of the capacity that can be handled today is based on legacy assets. And this is why it's important in our system that we have network overflows, which prevent sewage backing up during rainfall and causing flooding of homes and businesses with energy facilities. I just want to give a call out really to essential workers. Throughout the pandemic, as a society, we've been aware of the role of many essential workers. Well, NIWater, frontline workers are in this category, supplying the vast quantities of high quality drinking water that we need, and also what we need importantly for hand washing, which was and I suppose still is a leading weapon used against COVID-19. And to be successful in this critical task over the last 2 years, we've put in place extensive safety processes and to ensure consistent delivery of clean, safe drinking water and take the wastewater safely away. When I last presented...
Steve, apologies for cutting across you again. Your slide presentation is not changing. You're still at slide one yet.
Right, has that come through now?
Is that shared?
Yeah.
Is that on screen too?
Yeah,
it's shown, but he's not.
That's only slide one. We can see Steve.
Right.
No,
it's a wee
I'll reboot the presentation and start again.
Short reading. Right. You see the wee slide button there down at the very bottom corner, that one there. You need to, no, that one there. You need to hit that one.
Yeah, it's got the full screen?
No, it's not happening. There's something not happening.
Okay, well, do you guys want to put it up on your system now?
Right, we'll do it here.
That's okay.
If you stop sharing.
If you stop sharing, we'll take over the sharing. But right, you're on slide.
Slide 3,
into
that one.
Yep.
Well,
that's that. That's the
slide showing
the
networks, cable networks.
Okay. Just
go to slide 4 then, please.
There you are. Sorry about that. Right, we're off now.
Okay. Well, that's the call out there to the essential workers. And then, sorry, yeah, let's just go into slide 5. Okay. Thanks very much. So, when I last presented back in November 20, set out our regulation cycle. It's business planning process, which is a six-year cycle, and it's aligned with the Northern Executive Social and Environmental Guidance and its objectives for water and wastewater services. I also covered the extensive engagement we undertake with our regulators for prioritising investments within the business plan. Okay, the utility regulator assesses and scrutinises our business plans, and did so with PC21, and it published its determination in May 2021. And we accepted that determination. It was a £2.2 billion determination. Accepted that in July. And following on from this, we quickly turned to ensuring the plan was funded by the NI executive. And I'm pleased to say that for the PC21, at least the first year of it, we've been fully funded by the executive, and this is a positive and most welcome development. However, future funding is now more uncertain. The final determination itself sets out the levels of investment recommended over the next 6 years for Northern Ireland's water and wastewater infrastructure. It also recognises the significant efficiency gains NI Water has delivered to date, and to comfort you as partners is that we are investing in a scheme or indeed running our business that you can have assurance that it's done efficiently. And with the final determination, actually a further efficiency challenge has been put in place, and recognising the need for a £1.3 billion OPEX investment. We've got an efficiency of £15.4 million on that, and there's £117 million capital efficiency being driven on the £2.2 billion capital programme or CAPEX programme. Okay, so that's a significant challenge for us over the next 6 years. Can we go down to slide 6, please? So this slide projects our capital expenditure throughout the six-year PC21 period. And the red line on the bottom shows our investment on an annual basis, as an average anyway, over the last price control. So we're averaging about £150 million per year. So we're dependent on capital DEL or capital departmental expenditure limit funding for our capital programme. But you can see we've got a lot of ambition in terms of our investment over the next 6 years. We plan to increase investment substantially year on year. It's £221 million, as I mentioned, for the first year, and then this builds £267 million in year two, and up to £460 million year maximum, if you like, in year five, and then dips slightly to £432 million. So you can see that's a huge programme that we have in place. And just to give you a feel for the different service areas, on the right-hand side of the figure, you can see about £1 billion is invested in sewerage provision or wastewater. There's also our planned and reactive maintenance, just to keep our assets operating, keep the roof on the house, if you like, watertight, So that's a £440 million investment. To give everyone clean, safe drinking water, £168 million over the six-year period. And then we have our running costs of a large capital programme there, £320 million. And then planning for the future. We can't stand still. You know, we've got to deliver better service and more for our customers going forward. And that includes all sorts of raft of measures, including work to address climate change and cybersecurity and the likes of that. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, this slide sets out some key challenges that NI Water has, and I suppose indeed a lot of others have as well. We're all familiar now with, unfortunately, with the energy market volatility. Well, we're the largest electricity user in Northern Ireland. We have no ability to save funds for a rainy day or to borrow outside our resource Dell allocation, and we rely on the Northern Ireland Executive to provide additional funds in monitoring rounds. And if we don't get the money, then we're faced with having to switch off our systems, such as the wastewater networks. And if that's the case, even that wouldn't make sufficient savings with the cost of energy at the moment. So we got additional money in the January monitoring round to cover increased costs of our energy bills. Development constraints, point two, you know, they are unwelcome, and I'm sure you're familiar with the phrase drains before cranes. This challenge remains a feature of our lives for many years to come, and it's important to recognise that progress is being made, but there are long yards that we also have to go, and this is a position that we're in, not through our own making, but through sustained underfunding. And that leads us to the third point there, where we require, I suppose, sustained funding through PC21 to address this sort of generational underinvestment in our sewage infrastructure, you know, which adds to the I suppose complexity and significant inefficiency of delivering, you know, longer term asset resilience and reducing risk of deterioration to service levels for customers and protecting the environment from increased sewer flooding and pollution. You know, basically, if we want to put up the drains, there needs to be investment in the drains. The climate change emergency, you know, we're all familiar with this, and there was the COP26 last year. I'm pleased to say that we're moving forward, and we're assessing what we need to do as a company to reach net zero, and we've already got several initiatives such as planting a million trees, and we're piloting, you know, state-of-the-art technology. An electrolyzer is being piloted, and that splits hydrogen, sorry, water into hydrogen and oxygen, so you have a fuel with hydrogen, and that splitting uses energy from wind power at night. So that's a very sort of efficient way to do it. So we're leading the way there in the industry. Okay, if we can hit down to the next slide then, please. Okay, we work closely with council planners regarding the local development plans, and obviously we've been a part of the review of the draft plan strategy, and so we're familiar with the council's vision and goals. We know that in terms of economic growth, you know, you've got aspirations for 11,000 new homes by 2030, and also the creation of new jobs, 8,500 jobs as well by 2030. And to do to deliver on the plan, that needs to be supported by a fit for purpose wastewater and water infrastructure. And we're investing to support the plan and trying to align us as closely as possible. If you could go to the next slide, please. So here's an example of investment in the council area during the PC15 period. £5 million investment in a large clear water basin, which gives extra resilience, security of supply to the water distribution. So that's a significant enhancement, if you like, in the water security there. Go to the following slide, please. And in PC21, there's another approximately £4 million coming in terms of water services, with treatability improvements to Loch Fay water treatment works, more resilience and supply work, and also a trunk main from Iola to Mullagh Foy. Next slide, please. So in terms of wastewater, huge investment, £83 million, in wastewater is being targeted across the council area. There's a lot of detail on that slide, but really just to pick out maybe some of the main ones, Cookstown in the drainage area, or the DA, as you can see in that slide, there's about 14 to 15 million in upgrades to the combined sewer overflows. And also in Dungannon, there's another million being invested there in an overflow, with also 10 million being invested in the Cool Hill North wastewater pumping station. In that table as well are 11 treatment works. These are for our larger treatment works, greater than 250 PE or population equivalent. And that's totaling about a £54 million investment. And if we flick to the next slide, I'll tell you a little bit more about Dungannon. This is, a large investment that is actually spanning a couple of price controls. You can see in the middle, the sunshine in the front, the new works that was put in place, or the new treatment facility that was put in place in PC15. That's a Nerida process. That's a state-of-the-art granular activated sludge process. And you can see in the background there as well, the older part of the works that's been maintained to keep current capacity there during PC15. We've got another massive investment planned in PC21 of 27.5 million there. That's another sludge treatment facility, and we'll optimise existing processes and give an extra capacity. So that's a massive investment in one of your main hub towns, as identified in your development plan. If you go to the next slide, please. And just a quick slide here on the smaller works that are across the more rural areas in Mid Ulster. In PC15, we upgraded 14 rural works, and we have plans to upgrade another 5 in PC21, subject to all the available funding coming our way from the Northern Ireland Executive. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, we touched on the issue of development constraints a bit earlier. We know that the capacity constraints are unwelcome, as I said, and this is an issue that will require 15 to 20 years of sustained funding and investment by the executive. We're working closely with developers and council planners across the whole of Northern Ireland, and we're committed as a company to maximising the utilisation of our infrastructure and asset base, and we've explored all avenues to maximise that. And critical to this process really is early engagement via the pre-development inquiries. Okay. So, and part of this process, we've been looking at our planning responses and conditions and working very closely with developers. If you flick to the next slide, please. Okay, so what are we doing to address the constraints problem? Well, it's a two-tier or two-level approach. The first is strategic, and I've gone through quite a bit of the large-scale capital investment in our sewer networks and treatment works that we've got planned over the next 6 years. But there's also tactical levels where we look to work with developers, and also we're looking to design and construct solutions that assist developers, and they can be done on a bespoke site-by-site basis. We put together a developer constraints project team, and that's identified additional resources needs, which we've brought in over the last few years, revised our processes and procedures, give much more detailed responses to the planning through the planning process, and we engage directly with the developers, agents and designers, and we also have got a solutions engineering team which are there really to identify opportunities for things like stormwater separation, which allow a bit more capacity to exist in the network to allow new connections. We've also been working on our developer services website and refreshed the branding, and that's been launched in March 2022. And just saying there, that last key point, it's really important to have as early engagement as possible with developers and builders on future opportunities for economic growth. Next slide, please. So this just a snapshot of the website, and so you can go in through there and access information, particularly to do with pre-development inquiries. So I would encourage you all
you know, to share that knowledge of that site and encourage its use. Okay. Next slide, please. So this really is just an overview of some of the activities that we carry out through our education team. We have down the bottom there, as you can see, we visited 46 schools throughout the council area over the last year and put in place 29 water butts and got the messages out there on our Refolution campaign, trying to cut down on the use of plastic bottles. There's also, you know, our winter campaign that we have as well. We're coming out of that, thank goodness. And there's the Bag It Bin It campaign, which is really to stop people flushing things down the toilet that shouldn't be there, and causing blockages and fatbergs and things that you're probably aware of. And we're also encouraging, you know, water efficiency, which is particularly important when we have our drier spells as well, which are becoming more frequent in Northern Ireland. Okay, next slide then, please. So just in summary, we got a determination of 2.2 billion with a significant efficiency challenge, and we plan to deliver that over the next 6 years and upgrade major infrastructure to support your economic growth, you know, to support the development plans that are starting to come through. And also we're ready to engage, and we are engaging with developers on engineering solutions, bespoke solutions to drive things forward. The key messages are, without sustained and adequate investment, we have to choose as a society between protecting the environment and economic development, and it can lead to lots of difficult decisions. But key to us is the Northern Ireland Executive supporting our final determination funding as identified by the utility regulator over the next 6 years. So just to confirm, we have a plan in place, we have the necessary skills, but NI Water needs to be adequately funded by the NI Executive. Okay, that's pretty much it. The last slide, if you flick down to that, just has the how we can be contacted. And like all good companies, there's loads of channels there, and you've got your elected representative hotlines and the 24/7 water line. I encourage you to make use of those if you want to get in contact with us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Steve, thank you very much for the presentation. I don't think that what has been delivered tonight comes as any great surprise to everybody. I think we're all... What I would say is that based on Mid-Ulster, and we're solely concentrating on Mid-Ulster tonight, is that there is still a significant gap between... what is there and what we need, and we are one of the council areas that are continuing to grow, possibly faster than the Northern Ireland average, and our housing needs are continuing to grow with that, and the reality is that I believe that there is some housing developments that are either being stalled or are stalled as a result of the lack of infrastructure, both in wastewater and water service. So I suppose the question is, where do you see us going in the short term? I appreciate there's a long-term plan, but how do we get out of the immediate impasse? And I'm sure that's the mind of most councillors around the table and those on screen?
No, that's a good question. What I was trying to get across in the presentation as well is that we're not leaving any stone unturned. We want developers to engage early with us through the pre-development inquiries. We can use that then to look at a high level of potential capacity issues, and then we can conduct sort of wastewater impact assessments then, which can help identify a design or an opportunity to separate out stormwater either on the site of the developers build or throughout a broader area, and that can help create a capacity. So that's a more bespoke solution. It doesn't always work, but we have had
we've done about 86 of these, and I think there are 43 occasions where we've identified viable solutions. So there are, you know, that's a new process that's come through over the last 18 months. We also stand over extant planning. Anything that's extant planning, you know, we provide connections. There's also routes as well for developers. It's not an easy one, but they can install their own wastewater treatment works, but they will have to work with the Northern Ireland Environment Agency and get a water order consent to do that. And I just want to reiterate, you know, this is not a problem of Northern Ireland's making. We have been talking about these issues for a long, long time to do with underinvestment. And we have a plan, and it says 2.2 billion. And, you know, that is something that we can deliver in a 6-year period, and that is a huge investment. But we need that sustained over future price controls. You know, you're talking 15 to 20 years. And you know, I know it's unwelcome, but that is a reality. But the best thing for developers and builders to do is to contact us as soon as possible, and we will work with them and try to find a solution.
Okay. I've a couple of people have indicated, Councillor Culberson, and then Councillor Elatter.
Thank you, Chair, and I want to thank NI Water very much for the report here tonight. And I suppose just before I make the point that I wanted to make, I just want to place on record the thanks to the staff and the elected representative hotline. A number of them over this past year, I know maybe one or two of them has moved on, but Jennifer has always been very good on the elected helpline, and I think Kyle and Sinead, I think maybe Jennifer maybe has moved on from that role, but just place on record their help over this past year. They're very efficient and coming back to you and stuff, so I want to thank you for that. Welcome the fact that there's plans there for the Dungannon wastewater treatment plant, and it has been talked about for a number of years. I remember sitting in a similar meeting a few years ago, and I think we were told at that stage there was a list, and I think we were maybe second or third on the list at that time. And unfortunately, sometimes we don't seem to get higher up the list, but I appreciate the fact that it's down to budget. But if the budget was there in the morning, can you give us any indication, is Dungannon one of your first projects or not, or where do we come on the list?
That's like phase two will be coming on board. I mean, we were hoping to have 3 years certainty of budget, but obviously that hasn't happened. So, you know, we are a bit hand to mouth until we have certainty on budget. It's hard for me to stand here and give a, you know, cast iron guarantee, but that project, there's a huge amount of work that's gone into that, and trying to get it to them to stage to move forward. You know, it's one of our biggest investments in PC 21, being a £27.5 million proposal. So, you know, it's something that we want to move ahead with, but I don't know what we're going to get next year, or the year after, or the year after that. But our intention is to get into Dungannon, upgrade that works, and I know it will provide a lot of benefit to the one of your major hub towns, and there's a lot of housing association work planned as well. So we're aware of the need, and
Okay, Councillor
Elatter. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Steve, for the presentation. I know you've been talking about the strategic plan of work there, but what I want to ask about is a local issue, and I don't expect you to be able to answer the question for me now, but maybe somebody could come back to me with the answer. It was meant to be work done in Riverstown to upgrade the water mains, and there was some work done 2018-2019, and then there was work to be continued into 2020. It was meant to happen in March 2020, and was put off and put off. I suppose COVID was used as an excuse at that time as well, as contractors not being able to come out and do work. I asked about it last year in February 2021, and was told that the plans to do the work have been cancelled, that had been taken off the work schedule, and there's no plans for it to be put back on the work schedule. And really, I would just like an update as to where this is, because this work was considered quite essential at the time it was planned, and now, more than 2 years later, we've no idea what's happening with that museum. I don't expect you to be able to answer it now, but if someone could possibly come back to me with the, an answer, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we can do that. So very just can follow up on that.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Councillor Litter. Councillor McGuigan.
Thanks, Chair. Just again, thanks, Steve, for your presentation tonight. If I picked you up right, you mentioned that you're leading in the hydrogen energy market. And if that's the case, do you have any projects currently on the ground? In relation to that, and do you have customers that are requesting that energy at present, you know, like for example maybe TransLink or bigger companies like that?
So that's good. We have pilots for the stage, if you like, in the proof of concept. There's a lot of new technology being used, so it's early days, but we are leading the way, and we are a potential pathfinder for you know, the use of hydrogen in Northern Ireland. I have to say that it could be used to decarbonise or take you know, the TransLink network. So that's I suppose the big picture. As part of our our roadmap, if you like, or implementation approach to climate change and to net zero. So that's something that we are working on. But we have got pilots, it's the proof of concept and then the scale up. And we're also looking to use the other byproducts with oxygen, and whether we can use that in wastewater treatment works that have capacity issues, put that in the process, and make it go a bit faster, etc. You know, there's still a lot of proof of concept to happen there, and there are trials looking at that as well. So there's a few things that are being investigated and explored, and new technology put in place. But our intention is just, you know, this is a great opportunity, and you know. And maybe that's a good thing that you know, we're part of the Department of Infrastructure, and we can work closely with TransLink and try and you know, look at the use of hydrogen going forward in their buses. But it, you know, the scale of it is quite small at the moment, to be honest, Catherine.
Yeah, just to come back again, Chair. So I think you mentioned there, obviously, the site that we have in the Ulster at Loch Bay. It would be an ideal site for the like of that type of project or kind of project. Obviously, there'll be others, but I'm just thinking that would be an opportunity there in our own constituency.
Well, we sort of seem to be concentrating on the wastewater side because I think that's where we can use the byproduct of oxygen. But yeah, I mean, it depends on how the scale up of the technology and how it could be rolled out. You know, Dunfors, but there are quite a few things really that have to be stepped through, and it's early days. But you know, presumably, you know, we would have to have a broad network for going down the hydrogen road and to the electron hydrogen economy of the future. You know, that's going to evolve, or will have to evolve over the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 decades. You know, it's going to be a huge change, isn't it, for the way the world works.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councillor Molloy.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, thanks, Dave, for your presentation. Thanks for your previous answer around the structure in Dungannon, Councillor Cutherson. Steve, I asked a question. We have a strategic site in Dungannon as the Hill of the Neagle Visitor Centre. We have big plans for development up there. It is a visitor centre and a civic community centre. You're obviously aware that the infrastructure up there, there is the old reservoir tanks, which are covered over, still sitting there, unused in the current project, but they still can't be built on or used or built around. And we have the communication mast, which really, sitting beside our civic centre up there, is, in short words, an eyesore. And with modern technology, and I know it was looked at before, and there was a monumental price to look at reducing it or moving it. But is there any potential to re-engage with council officers around the Hill of the Lane as to what can be looked at again in terms of the both the communications mast and the reservoir tanks.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that, but yeah, I mean, potentially we could. Cost may be an issue.
That's not part of our PC21 business plan. There were significant costs, and that's not included in the next 6 years. But we can engage with you on that, Councillor Malloy, and come back to you. But I'm not aware of any plans for doing anything in that part of the world with communication mass.
Okay, we'll expect something back from you that Steve. Okay, yeah. Councillor Clark.
Well, we can put it through to that, but that was investment. Yeah, the loop was investment in PC15. I mean, I can read them off. There was Broke, Rocktown, Waterford Road, Carmine, Killybasky, Gordacoldy,
Dunmuller, Kappa, Mullywald. So those are small rural treatment works that were brought up to the standard by Lynn McCullough, and obviously a rural training biological contractor. So they'd all be works that would serve a population of currents of smaller than 250. And there's another five, which we haven't got on that map, which will be identified during the next 6 years for investment in the council area.
That's why I'm confused,
because
my
understanding of the case
hasn't
had the cost. It's because it's a less than 250 PE works. So we would upgrade it to the same standard by putting in a modern process, but it doesn't grow the capacity at that. It's more like a modern equivalent sort of base maintenance project. The other investment of 83 million that we get off, or whatever, 54 million, is when we have larger works. So it depends on the size of the receiving water body as well, but whether you can help increase your discharge and get allowance from NIEA for that.
But in layman's terms, work has been done at
Luke,
but it hasn't capacity to get to the
that. It was done for compliance purposes.
So it hasn't further capacity for...
No, that's right. It's being maintained pretty much. Less than 250 PE is the band that it's in. So we have 1,000 works, but about 260-270 are larger works, and the remaining 750 are smaller, less than 250 PE works.
How do we explain that as representatives of ratepayers and taxpayers that the work there does not allow further development in a very important work? It's one of those small places which has played a very important role in providing accommodation for local people and the JavaScript connection to a facility.
Well, it also depends on the treatment works, depends on the networks. You can have small package plants or septic tanks, can you, if you're in a more rural part of the world, and that's fairly common part of developments. We don't sewer out the whole of rural areas, but yeah, and I understand your question there. I can look into that for you and get more detail, but it's the type of scheme that it was funded through. It really is it's not a upgrade your grading capacities for compliance, for putting in a proper process so you're protecting the environment. And then Graham, I mean, you're on the call. Is this something you know more about the artwork scheme than myself?
I did that set for the after community plan, so we relate to roof and some of the
faces. Well, you could your community plan.
For roof.
Your development plan is focused on your main huts, or going down in the Cookspan and Macrofeld.
Councillor Clark.
I
think we can we'll take this. I think that's something that you want to maybe take up with Steve on a thing other than out in this public arena, if that's all right. I appreciate the point you've made, and it's well made, and I think it's definitely worth a following up on with NI Water directly. Is that okay? Thank you very much. Point well made. Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Steve, for your presentation. And I too would like to say thank you to all the staff who work in that in your water line, the hotline there. Of course, the service is excellent there, so please pass on my thanks. Very simple question, Stephen, and you won't probably have the answer tonight, but I've just come from a meeting with a group of potential buyers at Coolmount. Coolmount or Coolrex Manor in Cookstown, and there they have bought their houses almost or paid deposits on them. I need to be careful. Paid deposits on them almost a year ago. Some of them are living out of boxes. We thought we had movement on it a couple of months ago, but it appears that nothing is developing at the moment. And Steve, maybe somebody could come back to me with an update on it, please, because this is a classic case. Will you say that you enter into negotiations with developers before it starts? Well, obviously, I'm not sure what happened here, but people have been living out of their homes in the hope of buying these new houses, and they've been living out of boxes for almost 12 months, and some even longer than that. So, Steve, if somebody could come back to me on it, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Also needs to provide detailed design and an article 161 for off-site infrastructure for water adoption by Northern Ireland for infrastructure adoption by Northern Ireland Water. So I think a lot of this is with the developer and has been for several months to provide information to Northern Ireland Water so we can progress the article 161 agreement, for instance, for the ones for the off-site infrastructure and also to, the other one is for the on-site infrastructure. I can send you that via email as well after the meeting. there is quite a bit going on in that space, and it seems like quite a bit sits with what we've developed from the update I got.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. So, Maybe Councillor Wilson will want to facilitate a meeting or something with NI Water on that there when he gets that information.
Mr. Chair, we're having meetings at the present moment in time, but
it's not going anywhere.
No.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So if Trevor gets that information, then he can come back to you, Steve, on that issue. Okay. Councillor McKinney.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Steve, for your presentation, and thank you for your help in recent weeks on different issues. But just a point of information, perhaps, for myself. But as a member of the Planning Committee of Middlester, the planning here, so many times that we run into issues, just like the one that Trevor has just mentioned there, Councillor Wilson for Cookstown, I think that you really need to be coming back with a stiff answer to the Planning Committee, and rather than sometimes pushing the cart down the road to the NEAA. So really, if something's not suitable for the system, that response needs to come back. And even lately, liaison with the planning committee or the planning department of the future. We talk about the area plan, where there's so many different areas that will be coming in to different areas. I know you said you focused on Cooktown, Dungannon and Mackerfelt, but there is other areas within the Middlestrew area that will be expanding for future planning in the future. You know, but we still need an infrastructure to cater for sewage. Getting drinking water to homes doesn't seem to be an issue, but the sewage is a major issue for us as councillors within the planning committee, but also for the whole of the Middlestrew area. But I just wonder, is there a plan? Is there something going forward to cater for the new area that was coming in? Never mind the existing area that is already on plan. We hear so many issues, like the one that Councillor Wilson has just mentioned there, that backing up, spilling over the road, and things like that. And that's not the way we want to go forward. Thank you.
Yeah, no, well, I agree. I mean, say we're not here through our actions. This is something that's come along over over a period of time with sustained underinvestment from the NI executive. We, you know, if we could accelerate any more, then we would. But you know, we've already got a 2.2 billion investment over 6 years, and that's more than double what we've had in the last 6 year period. And we've got measures in place and new teams working with developers closely. And we've said we don't leave any stone unturned. We can't fix everything. And, you know, we work closely with the development plans. You know, and we're working, you know, the development plans spell out the three main hubs are your main focus for growth. And, you know, there's a lot of investment coming in. Come down, not every council area has that much investment. It has to be phased over the next 15 to 20 years. So, unfortunately, you know, the situation is we can't upgrade the networks all over council areas. It will take time. There's no magic bullet. There's no switch to flick. But we engage. We try and identify storm separation opportunities to take out rainwater. You know, so there's more capacity for more connections. And the flip side is, if we didn't have all this robust process with planning, you would get connections, it would cause sewers to enter people's homes. You'd have people in there, more people than already are in their homes, scared stiff when they get heavy rainfalls coming through, because they know it's going to come up through their toilet, up through the drains, coming through the front door. You know, we really don't want to have a site where you have the streets running like that. So that's why, you know, we do all our capacity checks. You know, we provide evidence-based responses to the statutory planning applications, but the best thing is to try and get for new developments or you know, planned developments before they're planned, they contact us with the pre-development inquiry, and we will try endeavour as hard as we can to find a solution. But there won't be a solution for everyone, I'm afraid, but we do the best job that we can, and we have built teams up, and we've got a massive capital programme, and there's a lot of investment in Mid-Ulster.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Councillor Burton.
Thank you, Chair. A very similar vein to the previous speaker and to Councillor Wilson, in relation to homes that are being developed in a housing development just beside the former PSNI station, and there is a number of families are thought they were moving into the home come April, and again they're living out of boxes, some maybe living in garages to just try and tide over to the home is ready. So, you know, I suppose to be fair to NI Water, I think a lot of the time they're getting the blame, and yet when I have went through the chapter with the planners and whatever, some of the work that has been done by the actual developer may not be where the treatment works may not have been sited in the right place. So there's always these issues that crop up. But I think it is what the previous speaker was saying about trying to work with the planners. And when something is not, you know, it's the families literally who are being left in no man's land, and to get updates on what, and we seem to be the ones that they come to try and be the middle ground for everyone. So it's really just wondering if there is any further update. If I have been liaising through the planning office, And I think Roy Mooney has been involved in this case. So maybe if there's any more updates, I'd really appreciate that in the aftermath of tonight's meeting. And I suppose just to also flag where there would have been issues in the past, both in the 5 Mile Town area and the Ballygolly area, where future development of homes would be restricted because of sewerage treatment as well. So I'm just wondering if it's at the same, I think at different times it has been more or less at full capacity. So those would be some of the issues I'd want to raise tonight. Thank you.
Okay, Steve, maybe you want to take those notes and just come back to Councillor Burton on those?
Okay, yeah, we can do that.
Have we enough?
Yeah,
okay, a couple more speakers just quickly. Councillor McNamee.
Yes, Chair, thanks. Our officers have been involved in Coolmount, what Councillor Wilson was talking about earlier. Can I ask that the updated information on the requirements of the developer are forwarded to myself as well, please?
So, yeah,
happy
to do that, Councillor McNamee.
No problem. Thank
Sorry.
You, Councillor McNamee. Okay.
Mr. Chair, just on that, in fairness, there was Keith Buchanan was involved and Cahill as well. So
okay.
if they all could be included in that.
Okay. Answer. Happy enough, Steve, on that? Is this on the same issue, Kerry?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, the
right,
Patsy,
go ahead.
Patsy McGlone.
Yes, sorry, Trevor just mentioned it was actually myself and Patsy's office. We have organised meetings regarding the Coolmount.
Fair enough.
If we could get some correspondence sent out to us as
well, that would be much appreciated. Okay. Steve, if I could just suggest maybe the best thing to do is send it to the Chief Executive's office and then he'll disperse it out to all of those names if you don't have the contacts. Is that all right?
That's perfect. Thank you very much.
That's it. And then hopefully nobody will be missed out. Appreciate that. Councillor Colvin.
Thank you, Chair. On that particular Coolmount one, I want to say one thing, Steve. Thank you very much. I raised the issue because I heard the words temporary treatment works. These are magic words when they are presented by the developer that seems to sweep aside everything else. It allows them to build his houses, and we end up with a situation that's been described by Councillor Wilson and Councillor Burton. So everybody then can pass the blame on from one agency to another. Somebody has to stand up and say, what is a temporary treatment works? Who is going to assess it and watch over it and make sure the thing works, and for how long is it going to be? I mean, temporary could be any length of time, as I understand it. So there's a very unsatisfactory way of working. It has led to the problems that are foreseeable, and I think it is time not to blame the Assembly alone because the funding isn't there. If it's not there, somebody has to say, we'll then stop until the funding is there. So that may seem a very simplistic way of looking at it, but there are a lot of people standing around tonight. They've paid a deposit on a home that they can't live in. And I'm speaking as the other councillors are on their behalf on this particular one. I think that whole issue needs to look at very, very seriously. Thank you, Chair.
Steve, do you want to come back on that one?
I suppose the plans that get built, I mean, I don't know the detail of that says temporary, but we do adopt wastewater treatment works that are built by developers, but they have to comply with the environmental regulatory standards, and we got shown that they're compliant and for a period of 12 months, and also got to put up the necessary health and safety. I suppose the way forward is adoption, but they have to be built to an adoptable standard for an water to take them under its control. Otherwise, I suppose it will sit with the developer stroke management company for that site. People's lawyers, when they're purchasing houses, should be well aware, well not well aware, but they should be made aware of that as a risk, I would suggest. It is, I suppose, symptomatic of the widespread development constraints, and there are over 116 areas across Northern Ireland that are experiencing capacity constraints. So that, it's not just in one geography; it's across the whole of the country.
The point that I think Councillor Colvin has made as well. We're not saying that we're all conscious of a problem, and we all want to work together collaboratively to resolve. Or to try and, because at the end of the day, we have a growing population, expanding population, and therefore there's a housing need that needs to be addressed. And it seems to be that the wastewater treatment and sewage is the biggest problem to it. Now, what I take from Councillor Coughlin's issue is that he's not saying we shouldn't have temporary, but it needs to be better managed that when it comes to the delivery, that it meets your standards. And maybe there needs to be a better involvement with the actual construction of that temporary from yourselves to make sure that when it comes to handover, that it's fit for purpose, and therefore we're not left in stalemate where people are left, haven't paid a deposit and can't move into their homes. So it's maybe not that the direction of travel is wrong. It maybe just needs a tightening up of the processes to make sure that at the end that they all meet the criteria and it's all deliverable. So again, maybe that's something the department could go and look at, and I want to go look at and see and come back. And council, I'm sure, and planner department will work in conjunction with you to try and get a resolution to that.
I would say that we have provided an asset standard over the last, I think, 6 months to address those smaller treatment works. They can be built to an adoptable standard. So that has been that's available from our developer services, and it will be provided, I think, on a one-to-one basis with developers. So that will does remove probably part of the issue that we're talking about there. Obviously, too late for some, but going forward, there is an asset standard for less than 250 PE wastewater treatment works.
Okay. I'm not taking on board that you're getting our point, but anyway, I don't think we're going to.
I'll provide more detail, but all I'm saying is that we are given advice that says this is how it needs to be.
Yeah, but sometimes it just needs a bit of closer collaboration and a bit more working. And sometimes people need to be told if it's not at the beginning, if it doesn't meet the standard, it's going to give us problems down the road. And you know, everybody is working within budget constraints and all the rest of it. So we just need people to be aware. Unfortunately, the reality is that it is the house purchaser or the tenant or our constituents, if we want to be clear about who are the people that are being penalised at the whole process, and it, irrespective of who's at fault or what's at fault. So we need to try and work around that more collaboratively to try and get a resolution. And I mean, that's just the bottom line. And I think you just need to go and take away and look at it. Our planning department need to do the same and see how we can come up with something to try and resolve the issue. Okay?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we have a developer services team that do want to engage and are engaging closely with developers. Hopefully, let's say, with this as a standard, we've got something really tangible to have these discussions with them, supposed to make sure they are built to that.
Okay. I think there needs to be a further conversation. Okay, listen. Right, thank you very much, and I appreciate that there is a lot of questions have been asked that you have taken notes off, or your staff have taken notes off. And what I will say is, please don't put them into the big black hole in the abyss, and don't come back with them. I expect, as a professional organisation, that within a week to 10 days, that there's a response back to all our councillors or to our chief executive team with the answers to the queries. And I don't expect it to go any further than that. I don't want to labour the point, but sometimes we find that 5 weeks down the line, we still haven't got a response. So please, if it's going to be a partnership and a professional process, we need to make sure that happens. Okay? Okay.
Okay. But we will come back to you.
Yep.
Thank you again for the opportunity tonight.
Okay, thank you to yourself and to your team for joining us tonight and for the presentation and for bearing with us on the questions. And as I say, we look forward to the answers in the not too distant future. Okay, thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your evening. Okay, members, we will move on with the agenda that's before us. So we're moving now to item six, and these are matters for decision. Chief Executive is going to keep an eye on the screen for me, and I'll try and keep an eye on the meeting in front of us, so therefore we'll leave nobody out and we'll do our best to try and incorporate everybody. So we have the council minutes of the meeting held on the 24th of February 2022. Could we have a proposer and a seconder, please? Councillor Brown's proposing. Councillor McKinney is seconding. No issues. All in favour? Nobody to the contrary. Okay, passed. Item 7 is the Planning Committee minutes of the meeting held on the 1st of March 2022. A proposer, Councillor Black. Councillor McPeak, a point of interest or a second, sir, Councillor McPeak?
Second.
Okay, thank you. So we have a proposer and a second, sir. All in favour, nobody to the contrary, passed. Okay. Item 8, Policy and Resources Committee minutes held on the 3rd of March 2022. Okay, could we have a proposer? Councillor McKinney proposed. Councillor Malloy seconds. Nobody to the contrary. Passed. Item 7, Environment Committee minutes held on the 8th of March. I have Councillor McNamee's hand on screen. Proposed. Councillor Brown second. All in favour. Nobody to the contrary. Passed. Item 10. Development Committee minutes held on the 10th of March. Proposer, Councillor Wilson. Seconder, Councillor McNamee.
Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Nobody to the contrary. All in favour. Passed. Okay. Item 11. Civic recognition request.
Can you say something else?
So, Philip's looking to speak on it there. We'll just let him go first.
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair and members. The report's on for approval here this evening. It was circulated as part of the papers on for approval this evening, members. Also, just want to draw your attention, there was one request which came in, and as officers, we had it down as a letter to be issued on behalf of the Council Chair to offer congratulations. On a reflection of that one again on information that's been provided to our office, I'm making a recommendation that Bruce Cullion, which is the last one on the appendix, be uplifted into the category of civic reception. On that basis, it's on for approval with that amendment, with my recommendation, Chair.
Okay, we have a proposer, Councillor Millen?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Seconder, councillors. Have a seconder for it, please, somebody. Councillor Colvin. Okay, thank you very much. So, civic reception requests are acknowledged with the amendment mentioned by Philip. Item 12 is conferences and training report. Philip again.
Thank you, Chair members. It's just as presented, members, it's on for approval here this evening. It's as two parts. There's conferences and training for members, and then the second appendix is those requests from staff of council. On for approval.
Okay, Councillor McKinney proposed. Councillor Black seconds. Thank you very much. All in favour. Thank you. Okay, matters for information, item 13. Correspondence. Who showed up me there? Councillor McKinney.
Just in correspondence there, a letter from the Permanent Secretary on the briefing there with the Chief Executive to do with the refugees from Ukraine. I know you did mention at the start of the had an opportunity to get in, you conducted it on the Chair's business, but I just want to, there is a facility near hand me, the Cronin Activity Centre would be capable of 30 folk or so, and be interested if the Council are doing something in that line. Maybe just want to add also that maybe the Council should be supporting those folk in any way possible. When we see the devastation that the Russian people have created upon the Ukrainian folk in recent days, and our hearts go out to them whenever we see hospitals and things like that being destroyed and children, I think at this time, maybe all we can say are our thoughts and prayers are with them. And maybe that's just not enough, but I think people would need to take a look at the situation, especially if there's anything this council can do in any way, I would like to see it done.
Okay. I think your point's well made, Councillor McKinney, and I know that other councillors from other parties have already raised it with me and with the Chief Executive, and so we've already taken on cognizance those comments, and anything that we can do as it arises in us, the Chief Executive will notify us and let us know. Okay, thank you. So item 14 is consultations. Again, there's a number of consultations. Sorry, Councillor Brown.
Thank you, Chair. To do the consultation on water flooding sustainable drainage. So I think in light of the NI Water presentation earlier on tonight, I think we should be making a response to that consultation.
Okay, that's fair enough. Again, on points of that, what I would ask is that if members can feed into it, you know, sometimes whenever we talk about a consultation and a response, we leave it to our officer team. And sometimes then when it comes out, we be critical of what they've put in it or not, as the case may be. I think we need to assist our officer team in putting the consultation together. So what I would ask is that if members, even if the points that you've raised tonight, if you put them on an email and send them in, then it means they can take those and gurgitate them and put them into some sort of a format and help to, as it were, steer the direction of response to that consultation. I think that's, again, about working in partnership. Councillor Corey, your hand's raised.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just on the consultation on the declaration, contribute to that as well. I've had a wee look through it today, so I see it was positive that the application process is going to be easier and the criteria line. But I think I need a look as well at people getting into that in the first place and what we can do to support and prevent them from falling into that, as there are a lot of vulnerable people at the moment due to the cost of lot of prices, and there's going to be more people who will be falling into that, so we need to do all we can to put whatever measures in place to prevent that from happening.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Corey. Point noted and made. Thank you. Councillor McGuigan.
Thanks, Chair. The one that I'm interested in here is the Department of Communities one, where they're asking to give our views on the National Lottery Heritage Fund draft policy. Now, that one there, in terms of our heritage, we have lots of it across Mid Ulster in different ways, old heritage and all of that. And, you know, to date, my view is that we've got very little support in terms of maintaining what we have. And our conservation areas, you know, where we're asked to, or, you know, the people who own are asked to, if they go to do any work, there's no grant and support whatsoever for it. And I think it's important if we want to keep our bold heritage and all of that, that we should be looking for a direction of travel within that policy. And you know, lately we have had a new heritage officer appointed, and we also have a conservation planning officer. And you know, between them, you know, they have the you know, the knowledge to feed into that process there. So I think it's an important one to get involved in and feed into it. And I'm happy to come in with the board officers, you know, on that. We have a bit of time, 25th, I think it's the 25th of April, it's the cutoff there. So we've got a time to get a response on there. I'm not sure what
committee
that
feeds
into.
We need to delegate authority to a committee for that one.
I'm being advised here by my officer team that we would need delegated authority to a committee to look into that a bit more, Councillor McGuigan. So are you happy to make that a proposal? Somebody seconds that proposal? Councillor Burton has seconded that proposal, so that will go to a committee and therefore get a little bit more of spade work and a bit more momentum behind it, if you're happy enough.
Yeah, what committee will I go to?
Right, it'll go to maybe a bit of both of Environmental Development Committee, so the officer team will decide on that and see where it's best placed, okay? So if yous are happy with that, we'll, and nobody to the contrary on that proposal, okay, happy enough. And again, what I would say is, folks, based on the three proposals across the table tonight, if councillors, please contribute to it as well. Feed that into our officer team, and therefore then that will assist them on in what they need to try and do. Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, that brings us to item 15, which is a notice of motion, and the first one is in Councillor Mellon.
Chair, Councillor Mellon is requesting that the Chair
Yeah, that's quite okay.
Thank you, Chair. So the motion is, this council recognises the deep concern the cost of living crisis that is impacting hundreds of thousands of families across our society, and the rising home energy and electricity costs, which has placed a severe burden on already struggling households and businesses across our council area. The collapse of the executive caused by the resignation of DUP First Minister Paul Gibbon is preventing a budget or the allocation of $300 million available from Treasury from being agreed, and is hampering ministers from using their full spending power to get people the week to rely and depend on it. This council calls for the immediate restoration of the executive, and I do realise that the executive has shut down today for the election, but there is an election coming, and I suppose we're looking for a full executive participating after this election in order to allocate and agree spending to support workers and families. Furthermore, this council calls upon the Westminster government to take action where local ministers cannot by scrapping VAT on domestic energy bills and cutting duty on home heating oil, petrol and diesel for the duration of the energy crisis, introducing a windfall tax on energy generators and redirect money towards supporting families. Reverse the planned increase in national insurance contributions and halt the planned change in the diesel entitlement. So, Chair, the cost of living crisis, as we all know, is affecting all residents and businesses in the Midulter area and placing a severe burden on their financial resources and also their personal lives. People are struggling to heat their homes and put fuel in their cars and food on the table. Heating oil has tripled in price since this time last year, along with gas prices. I know some people in Mid Ulster recently signed up and got gas as a means of heating. The high cost of fuel is particularly hard on people living in rural areas, and we are a rural constituency with poor access to public transport and on community nursing and caring staff who have to travel big distances to provide vital services to vulnerable and sometimes very ill and dying people. We talked a lot recently in the council about the shortage of care staff and the difficult working conditions and low pay, and this situation is putting even more pressure on these individuals. The high cost of electricity is also having a negative impact on those people relying on medical equipment at home. Those people needing oxygen therapy and CPAP machines, as well as other devices that are run by electricity, have seen prices rocket, and they have no choice but to use these machines in some instances to stay alive. The Tory Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, yesterday had an opportunity to take real action to help with the crisis, but he failed to do so. He didn't tax energy corporations making huge profits during this crisis, and continues to plan to punish working people through the impending rise in national insurance. The 5p reduction on the fuel duty goes nowhere near enough to help struggling families. The British government decision to remove red diesel from non-agriculture industries will further increase costs for businesses, which will then be passed on to consumers. One of the things that the least he could have done was even to have reinstated the £20 cut that was made to universal credit for those most in need. This lack of leadership
and action, along with the DUP withdrawing from the executive, hindering ministers from being able to fully help citizens by holding back a three-year budget and preventing resources being used that could help mitigate and support communities, shows the contempt both parties have for people here in the North. People need support now, and it is the responsibility of all political parties to work together to provide that support. Gáire Mbeatha, Chair. Sorry, I can't hear anything.
Sorry, I apologize, I didn't switch on my mic. Have a second for a proposal, Councillor Malloy, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I'm happy to second, Chair.
Okay. You want to go ahead?
Yeah, no, just a couple of figures that have gone out whenever Kevin was talking about our energy providers. Shell announced pre-tax profits in 2021 of £19.3 billion. BP reported profits £9.4 billion. And recently, the BP has paid no tax on North Sea oil or gas for the last 5 years. 2021 SSE, the energy provider, pre-tax profits of £600 million. This is the same people who said that customers should do star jumps to keep warm. Chair, energy providers are making huge profits on the back of people. People are suffering. The cost of living is rising. Something needs to be done urgently about it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Councillor Malloy. Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this notice of motion that's before us tonight is a bit rich, coming from a party that supported the largest rates increase of all the councils in Northern Ireland, along with the SDLP. But while agreeing with parts of the motion, I would, however, refer the proposers to the motion to Article 8 of the Northern Ireland Protocol. And from my reading of this, the relevant passage is the third sentence, and it follows: the United Kingdom may apply to supplies of goods taxable in Northern Ireland VAT exemptions and reduced rates that are applicable in Northern Ireland in accordance with the provisions listed in Annex 3 to this protocol. To me, Mr. Chair, that suggests that VAT exemptions and reduced rates can only be applied in Northern Ireland if they are also applied in the Republic. So all those parties who are championing the full implementation of the protocol need to take a hard look at themselves. The UUP have engaged with the UK government and the EU on this issue, and we see no reason why this could not be addressed. There is no doubt, Mr. Chair, the cost of living crisis is pushing individuals and families beyond the brink, and it's been well known for some time. And while welcoming the emergency fuel payment scheme administered by Bryson Charity Group and the £200 energy payment support scheme, it might be an idea, and I would hope that the Minister for Community should explore extending the immunity or the emergency fuel payment scheme beyond March the 31st and adjust the criteria to ensure more households are eligible. This crisis requires an appropriate response from both Westminster and the Northern Ireland Assembly. I've just heard Councillor Malloy issue or say figures about the generators, the power generators, and there is absolutely no doubt that these people are making an absolute fortune at the expense of people who are really, really struggling to make ends meet. And I think that more pressure should be put on the energy providers to do more to help these people. The other issue that might help, and it's only in the short term, is the Fuel Poverty Task Force, which is supported by many within the third sector. And maybe if this was set up and running, the response to date of this has obviously fallen short of what is required. And while, Mr. Chairman, I welcome the reduction in fuel duty, it doesn't go far enough. And I hope that all the garages are passing on this cut as quick as they put their prices up. People are now having to make a choice between eat or heat. And, Mr. Chair, in this day and age, this is totally unacceptable. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Wilson. Councillor Clark.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. I wouldn't be here if I tax. So it's not that long since fuel was in or around 120 a litre. Now 70% of that would be roughly 84 pence. That fuel a day is at least 170 a litre, and at 70% the tax on that would be £1.19. Again, in that period of tax to the economy of 35 pence a litre. So much for the Chancellor's proposal to reduce it by 5p. It's only a drop in the ocean. The government itself, never mind the everybody else, the government itself has given massively from the raise in the price of fuel.
Thank you. Councillor Quinn.
Thank you, Chair. sorry, I'm just getting my screen up there, sorry. Thank you, Chair. In recent months, before Russia invaded Ukraine, we've seen a big increase in electricity and gas. We've seen SSE Electricity announce 39% increase, the biggest in over a decade. Then after war started, we've seen oil prices going up 35%. We've seen that from refueling our own cars to heating our own homes. The most worrying statistic is the percentage of those in fuel poverty in Ireland will jump from 22% to 44%, perhaps even as high as 50%. That is almost half the homes in Ireland are suffering from fuel poverty. Despite the announcements from the UK Treasury yesterday, there doesn't seem to be any fall in those prices, at least nowhere near where they were, and inflation could rise as high as 8%. The price of food has went up, the price of insurance has went up, the bare necessities have went up. Sadly, but predictably, the number of food banks has increased. Those using the food bank, numbers have went up. The number of people using charity organisations such as Submits to the Paw have went up, which I've seen firsthand. These price increases couldn't come at a worse time, with the country coming out of the pandemic, the economy has been struggling, businesses have closed, and many people have lost jobs, houses, and incomes, and have no option but to sign on benefits. And also, with so many on low incomes and zero hours contracts, they've been left with a very stark choice, either it's heat or eat. To drive or survive. All this is a very clear sign that our country is in the middle of a serious crisis. Crisis that Westminster doesn't care about, and thanks to the actions of the DUP, the crisis scorner is now limited to be working. We have £300 million sitting there ready to use, but no, the slogan seems to be saving seats is more important than saving heat. It would be remiss of me not to mention those out striking for a better wage at the moment. 1.7 million increase will be not much protection if these prices keep rising. With the increase of prices and related costs, the increase of VAT in taking pressure has also been about the Chancellor's coffers. We have read and heard about the massive profits the major companies have been making at the expense of the consumer, who have been left hit hard by the hike in costs. We've seen the Chancellor make this announcement yesterday, but there's nothing really much in it. There's nothing about converting taxation increases to the big companies or levying taxes on the oil companies. Council lawyers already provided great figures to show that these companies are leeching off the people enabled by the stooges in number 10. We've also seen increased spending on, we need to see increased spending on renewable energy. We need to see our dependence stop on oil and gas. There's nothing. Seems like a pipe dream now, especially since Boris is going from dictator to dictator, looking for the best price in oil. We can look at our own people, we can look at our own ministers. We should be looking for extra monies from the likes of the department communities, that each household should receive financial help. But unfortunately, Stormont's now out for the election. We are all sitting talking about this around the room, while people are struggling to feed themselves, struggling to heat themselves. I'm happy to support the motion. Anything we can do to help people. I've made no mistake, people are going to die over the next couple of months because of the cost of living, and it's something we need to take seriously, and we're really so happy to support the motion from the Chair. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Quinn, thank you very much. I think it's a little bit disappointing, to say the least, whilst we all in this room, and I think on the screen, are all too aware, and I don't think anybody would disagree with the fact that The rising costs are crippling working families and causing much heartache and pain to many individuals across our district and across the thing. It's quite obvious that the motion is a part of an election manifesto and process. And had the two centre elements of the motion been omitted, then I think that there would have been animosity across the room and for the motion. However, Sinn Féin have very clearly used this as a bit of an election stunt. It's a bit too late, as some of the speakers have said. Today really indicates the close of the Assembly. However, we also know that in the past, ministers at Stormont, where there is a will, there is a way, and therefore they have been able to use monies and spend monies and come together and sort out the problems when it suited. And so therefore I still say that there, where there is a will, there is a way, and therefore that should be put ahead of all other issues and sort out whatever spending or can be made to help the working families and those in need. Without any further ado, I'm not going to grabble into the same election stunt. Therefore, I'm going to go put the motion to a vote, and it's either for or against. Sorry, last. Pardon? Yes, but you were about to go for a vote, so you should indicate before, but apologies. I'll let it happen this time.
Maybe buy a new pair of glasses.
No,
just simple comment I just want to make. I want to maybe, I'm not going to reiterate what Trevor had just said. It's very rich coming from the parties that have spoke in support of this motion so far to ridicule those in gas or electricity or in oil, not to take money out of their own pockets, but rather than take it off the households here within our own province and here within Mid Ulster. I'd just like to remind you once again, you've done exactly the same thing. We had a reserve here which we could have coped with any pressures for the year that lies ahead, but yourselves decided to take a little more off the general public, and then you cry here tonight about how people are suffering. Unfortunately, you had no interest in the people just a few weeks ago. I'm saddened here that they don't see something that we could do. It's kind of a wee bit of, well, electioneering, if you want to put it in a different way. We talk about climate change, and once again, we're here about seeing how much oil we could burn. And the fact that heating oil is double the price now that it was prior to this war, or prior to the pandemic, not three times the price. And maybe in another couple of weeks, it will come back down a little more. But climate change, why are we not looking forward there? Why are we not encouraging in this motion about free transport, free public transport, something that we could have done in Northern Ireland, something that was in our capability? And as I said, maybe this is a day too late, and where people could be able to have free transport to and from work, which would cut the amount of pollution down and also cut the amount of price down in their pocket. So I just think it's a little rich coming from people who are happy to put their hand in somebody else's pocket and then they cry about their concerns of their welfare. And we all know that there is a major problem with the cost of living and here within our country and within our land. But perhaps the next few weeks, if they go over the last week where fuel prices have been coming down, once again, I do welcome the 5p a litre of tax taken off our fuels. More would be nice, as somebody who uses fuel every day. But once again, there are those pocketing. It's not just the issue of the price of fuel. There are those who are capitalising on the price of fuel, and not so much said about them. Thank you, Chair, for letting me come in. Thank you.
Okay, so it's for or against or abstention. Okay, so Councillor Ashton is absent.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, just on a point of clarification and just on a point of order, the notice of motion doesn't actually mean anything because the Assembly is down, and therefore, you know, it's irrelevant.
I appreciate that, but again, I just have to take it as it is. Councillor Watson, I appreciate
it. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Bale.
I did mention that as well about the Assembly being down and more that it's an aspiration of winning the elections over in the Assembly,
comes back again, that all parties are working together for the good of everyone.
I appreciate that, Councillor Leader, but that's not in the actual content of the motion. So whilst it circumstantial, it's not there on paper. So I have got to take the motion as it stands, and therefore we will take it as for or against. So Councillor Bale? Not here. Councillor Black?
Against.
Against. Councillor Brown?
Against, Chair.
Councillor Buchanan?
Against, Chair.
Councillor Burton?
Against, Chair.
Councillor Clark?
For.
Councillor Colvin?
Against, Chair.
Councillor Corey?
For.
Councillor Cuddy?
Against.
Councillor Culbertson?
Against.
Councillor Doris? Not here. Councillor Lear?
For.
Councillor Ford?
Against, Chair.
Councillor Gildernew?
For, Chair.
Councillor Glasgow is absent. Councillor Graham?
Against, Chair.
Councillor Martin?
For, Chair.
Councillor Kearney?
For, Chair.
Councillor Kerr's absent. Councillor Mahon, I take it he's not here.
I am.
Oh, you're here, sorry, you've come back on screen. Sorry, my apologies. For? Councillor Niall McAleer?
For.
Councillor Sharon McAleer?
For, Chair.
Councillor McFlynn?
For, Chair.
Councillor McGuigan, Brian?
For, Chair.
Councillor Sean McGuigan?
For, Chair.
Councillor Derek McKinney?
Yes.
Councillor myself? Against. Councillor John McNamee?
For, Chair.
Councillor Dolan McPeak?
For, Chair.
Councillor Sean McPeak?
For, Chair.
Councillor Millen?
For, Chair.
Councillor Malloy?
For.
Councillor Matisse not here. Councillor Mullen?
For, Chair.
Councillor O'Neill?
For, Chair.
Councillor Quinn?
For, Chair.
Councillor Robinson?
Against, Chair.
Councillor Totten?
For, Chair.
Councillor Wilson? Motion carried. Okay, the motion has been carried. Okay. That moves us on to item 16.
Sorry,
my apologies. I should have.
That's okay. I would just like to thank everyone for their comments on the motion and support from all speakers. And just some of us were at training the other evening about boards. And there's been a few comments made here this evening about you could have dipped into our reserves to bring the rates down for everyone. That was done last year and has left us in a bit of a kind of a financial predicament this year. And we were told on that training by the trainer that it's the responsibility of councillors and board members to ensure that the reserves aren't dipped into. And that there's always adequate reserves to carry out the work of the council or the board. So I think that that's something that just needs to be said. And I see Councillor Kearney smiling as he was on that, and it was very forcefully put to us that that was something that everybody needs to be mindful of. And this situation with rising costs going up and up and up, the council themselves are going to have to pay more out for fuel and for materials and for different things as well. Comment from Councillor McKinney on green public transport, would love that, absolutely love that, but I would wonder how people west of the Ban would get anywhere, because there isn't really a public good infrastructure there for public transport in the first place, even if it was free. And how all these people will be able to get around to the carers and the community nursing staff and things will be able to get around to do their jobs with free public transport. But I do appreciate all the comments, and I just, as I said, hope that when the election is over, that everyone can get around the table and work fully for all the residents of the Ulster Council. And thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Chair.
Sorry. Chair. I can't. No, apologies. I'm not allowed to let anybody else come back because she was the proposer. You have to abide that now. Please do not push the boat. Come on. be honourable to you. That's the rules, and I have to abide by them. And I could come back to you, but I have to abide by them as well. Okay? Item 16 is the notice of motion in the name of Councillor Culberson to move.
Thank you, Chair. And as I move the motion, I don't believe it actually needs a lot to introduce it, as the motion is self-explanatory. These voluntary drivers who under contract from the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service and the Health Trust are providing an invaluable service. They transport patients to hospital appointments and also educational settings. Many service users will pay testament to not only the transport but also the actual companionship they receive in talking to the driver while during what can be a very difficult time attending hospitals for treatment, etc. These volunteers have been operating on the same mileage allowance for the past 12 to 15 years. Every councillor in the room here will know what it costs to run a vehicle with the current cost of fuel and maintenance of a vehicle. While I'm aware that if the allowance were to increase past a certain figure, it could result in HMRC getting involved, but I believe there is scope for the department to look at this to provide some degree of an increase. And I'll move the motion that Mid-Ulster Council recognises the invaluable service the voluntary drivers offer to the community. Many seriously ill patients, particularly living in rural areas, depend on this service to attend appointments by using their own vehicles. These volunteers save the Department of Health via contracts with the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service and the Health Trust significant amounts of money per year. Further to this recognition, that Mid-Ulster District Council writes to the Department of Health to urge them to increase the current mileage allowance of 38p per mile currently paid to these voluntary drivers, as it is inadequate in offsetting their fuel and vehicle maintenance expenses. Thank you.
Okay. Seconder. Councillor.
Mr. Chairman, the voluntary car service is purely a voluntary scheme which operates under the auspices of the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service, who maintain a register of the volunteer drivers. The service is provided by volunteers who, using their own private vehicles, transport patients from their own home address to and from health service facilities, i.e. hospitals. So, Mr. Chairman, I wish to second the motion.
Okay. Councillor McKinney.
Thank you, Chair. There's no doubt that the people who provide this service is a very valuable service, especially within the rural community, as we've just heard there. Sometimes a lot of people are very isolated, and I suppose, as the councillor has said, some of the trips that they're going to may not be the one that you want to look forward to. But just on a thought there, we talked there just in the previous one there about our rates last year and the shortfall, as some people saw it. But with our bank account rising by so many millions last year, is there anything that I know that it was only 1.2 million that we were estimated we were short of the 0% increase last year. But with the COVID money that we received and the extra millions that we have in our bank account, is there anything we could do as a council to assist the people in this area? I know that Stormont is closed for business, as you have noted earlier on, to help out in some way. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. I'll come back to that in a moment. I'm going to take other speakers first, and then that'll give our Chief Executive time to think. Councillor Corey.
Thank you, Chair. I'd also like to support the motion, as has already been said. Volunteer drivers provide an invaluable service to our most vulnerable and seriously ill residents, many of whom live in very rural and often difficult to get to areas. These residents are dependent on volunteers to bring them to, but also can be life-saving appointments for cancer treatments and other serious illnesses. Many of the people dependent on the service are older, may live alone, or may be unable to afford to travel for appointments without volunteer drivers. The mileage rate of 38 pence per mile is simply not enough to cover expenses incurred. We are currently experiencing a cost of living crisis, with petrol and diesel prices going through the roof. So many workers and families are struggling to cover the cost of fuel, home heating, food, and other bills. the volunteers are no longer able to afford provided their grade with service, we will lose them. This potentially puts lives at risk if people are unable to attend fatal appointments. If they lost drivers, it would also increase costs for an already under pressure health service, who would then have to pay for ambulances for other vehicles and provide or recruit staff at much greater expense. It simply does not make sense to risk losing these drivers to provide much needed service. They should be given an increase as soon as possible so they can continue to provide this service. The role of volunteers I know love doing and see as a vocation. Many have built up friendships with people who face loneliness, social and rural isolation at extremely difficult times in their lives, as has been stated. The Health Minister urgently needs to increase mileage allowance for volunteers and indeed for those providing home care in the community who are also still struggling with fuel costs and still do not receive enough mileage. People who were essential and key workers during the pandemic, but who have yet to be properly recognised and treated as such. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Councillor Quinn.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'll be very brief. As supporter of the motion, I think a lot of the points have already been covered by other speakers. We all know in this room, online, we all know the importance of these voluntary workers. We know all the importance of our health workers in the community. We're looking after old people, we're looking after vulnerable people. And quite frankly, with the rising costs, the mileage they're getting is nowhere near what it needs to be. And some of these people are ending up their own expense. And something needs to be done about it. If it is the Department of Health, certainly need to look into it, but we also need help from the Finance Minister and from the Executive. Obviously, that will be in place until after the election, and obviously, we don't know if it will be coming back after the election, but people need to put aside all the silly stuff that we're arguing about. Look at the people who are really doing the work on the ground that need our help. We need to come together and we need to find a solution for it. Support of the motion, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. All right, folks, it's again, it's for or against the motion. If I'm reading the mood,
I just wanted to clarify something, Chair. 2 points. One of the councillors alluded to it, and I know Councillor Wilson also said to me privately there, maybe perhaps why home health helps or care workers aren't included. The reason they're not included, they are actually on a salary. These volunteer drivers are not. So I feel that it would be better not to bring the two together. Perhaps maybe we could look at that on a further motion, maybe next month or whatever, but I think it's better to keep it separate. And also the fact, yes, the Assembly Executive's down, but this we're writing to the Department of Health, and at the fact that the Executive is down won't have a bearing on us writing to the Department of Health and the Department of Health looking at this.
Okay, fair enough. All right, with those clarities, unless somebody indicates to me that they're against the motion, and if they do, then we'll go through the process of calling out names. Other than that, I'm going to take it that everyone's in support of the motion. Okay, nobody to the contrary. I declare the motion passed. Okay, Councillor Colburn, you want to come back? No, happy enough. Okay. Thank you all very much. Appreciate that. That brings us now to confidential business, and therefore could I thank those that have been joining us and watching online for being with us tonight, and wish you a safe night. Thank you very much.